Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop on this Fine Food Friday, December 4th. I'm Ray Graff. Today we welcome back Anissa Waheed of Tara Kitchen in Schenectady, Troy, on Gilderland. She has appeared on Beat Bobby Flay and Guy's Grocery Games, or if you're from Montreal, Guy's Grocery Games. And Anissa is with us today to answer your questions about Moroccan cuisine and cooking methods. She is an amazing individual, a great entrepreneur and marketing genius. Yeah, and she cooks very well, too. If you have a question about some cooking methods from Morocco or elsewhere, she is the one to talk to. Give us a call, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Anissa, Moroccan cooking and your calls coming up right after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. It's a Food Friday, and today we welcome back Anissa Waheed of Tara Kitchen. After spending 14 years in Manhattan, Anissa returned to Schenectady in 2008. She and her husband opened a Moroccan and Indian boutique named Tara. Then in 2011, Tara Kitchen opened its doors at 431 Liberty Street. She also operates a location in Troy and now a new location in Gilderland. Tara Kitchen has been named the best Mediterranean restaurant by Capital Region Living. Anissa has been on two national TV shows you may have heard of. Beat Bobby Flay is one. Guy's Grocery Games is another. I saw that one. It was very entertaining. If you have a question about Moroccan cooking, Anissa joins us to answer your calls. Give us a call now, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can also email us, as some people have already done. It's voxpop@wamc.org, voxpop@wamc.org. But the number, once again, is 800-348-2551. Anissa Waheed, welcome back.
Hi, Ray. How are you?
I am
well. Thank you for having me.
I am well, and you're welcome. And how are you feeling?
Well, the past couple of weeks have been really insane with the new location opening.
You finally got it open. That's great. Tell me.
I know.
In Gilderland, right?
You're late. Well, yes, Gilderland.
Okay, so the last time you were on, and that was during the pandemic, I got to tell you, you know my memory is horrible, but I know it was sometime during the lockdown you were here, or on the phone anyway, and you were talking about opening that, and how is it going, and how long have you been open over there?
So it's about 2 weeks now. We opened on November 24th, and you know the reception has been extremely warm in Gilderland, and we're excited to be here. Of course, all of the usual, you know, pains in the kitchen and front, those kind of typical opening stuff. But for the most part, I'm actually quite happy with how everything is transitioned. And I think this was a lot less pain-free than when I did Troy. So, you know, we definitely learned some lessons there.
So, really, Troy was painful, huh? All right, we'll have to bring that up a little later in the show. But, you know, it's funny. It's not funny. It's sad for a lot of restaurants over the last 8 or 9 months. They're struggling,
yeah.
And some have closed,
yeah.
and some may never reopen. But you have opened another location in the middle of a pandemic. First of all, nothing you do surprises me at this point. But how do you manage to do it so well, given the tough times?
Well, I think it goes back to sort of our origins. If you we've talked about this in the past. When I first opened 10 years ago, the first location, my hope was to survive the first 9 months. So I always sort of operated from the idea that we were going to fail within the first year, knowing all kinds of statistics and all of that stuff. So we've always been a company that is very lean, is very trim in terms of how we do our process, how we fiscally very responsible, and always sort of waiting for a shoe to drop, right? Of course, the pandemic was something that none of us could have ever imagined at this scale. But in some ways, because we have always run a tight ship, I think it helped save us. And also just sort of, changing with the times and pivoting with what's happening in the market space with the pandemic and switching to a complete takeout model, all of those things, I think, have helped us. I don't think at any point, I ever thought about giving up.
I wouldn't suspect that you would. Anissa Waheed of Tara Kitchen joins us today, always one of our favorite guests. You know, you mentioned how the paradigm has changed to some extent because so many restaurants, it's curbside pickup all the time. And how have you altered your recipes for that?
You know, it's not so much that we had to alter our recipes, but we definitely had to alter how we did production in the kitchen. When dining is open and customers are coming in to eat in the restaurant, the flow of how the kitchen processes food is very different from when you do takeout, when you do strictly takeout. So, for example, let's say you have 30 people trying to order dinner at 5 p.m., all expecting to eat at 5:30 or 5:45. And not only that, but for those 30 separate individuals, you now have to have, right from their appetizer to their entree to their drink to their dessert, all ready at the exact same time. Whereas in a restaurant, you know, people come in and go, they have a different flow of who's ordering what and at what time, and there are many different parts of the restaurant that service that table, so it's not 100% dependent on the kitchen. So I would say that was probably the biggest adjustment we had to make, is how do we cook. You know, we are a scratch kitchen. We cook to order and we cook fresh food. And I have extremely strongly revolted against the idea of just having big batches of food in pots that we were kind of spooning out, right? So I really had to, it was more about changing my workflow and thinking process, backing up our time, thinking about our containers, you know, what type of food goes into what containers at what temperature. So interestingly enough, it wasn't our recipes that needed to be changed. What needed to be altered was our workflow and our cooking times, if that makes sense.
No, it makes a great deal of sense. Anisa Waheed of Tara Kitchen joins us, and we'll get to your calls momentarily at 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Well, I mean, one of the things that impresses me about the way you do business is the way you have your ear to the ground, and you're fine tuning all the time, whether it's the stuff that you sell in the stores or your restaurants or any of the things that you seem to touch.
Yeah.
Now, my question for you is, given the way things have shifted and the way the workflow has shifted, are these lessons that you will take with you when that great day comes, when everything's more or less back to normal and people are in restaurants and it's full capacity?
Absolutely. And, you know, what's interesting, Ray, is I feel like these past 8 months, this whole year, I have changed and grown and completely altered my vision, my life plan, my business plan, my vision plan, all of that. And I recently had an office meeting in the company where we talked about this, like just because of this experience and all of the things that we kind of learned and went through, not just about how we do business, but how we interact with customers and what that means. I mean, it was sort of like an MBA course, like, you know, on steroids.
Yeah.
In the past 8 months, we learned so much stuff about human behavior, consumer behavior, how we as business people interact. So there was a lot of stuff, I think, that we've learned, and that's definitely made us grow for the better, I think. So, yeah, we will definitely be taking all of this into the future.
And hopefully that future will be, A, fairly quickly upon us, and B, back to some semblance of normalcy. I think we're all hoping for that. This email came in, by the way, and this sparked my memory about a conversation you and I had several shows ago. Charlie in Saratoga writes, is Anisa still planning to open up a spa tapas restaurant? I heard her talk about it a couple years ago. I've been looking forward to it. What's the deal on that one?
Yes, as a matter of fact, we are. We're still continuing with the project. Back in March, all the people involved on it, we sort of made a decision that we were sort of going to put that on a slow burner as we tried to understand what was happening within the restaurants and food industry and the existing businesses. So literally December 1st, we started having, you know, regrouping, having all our meetings again. We met with Shippo to evaluate the building that we're going to be in. So yes, it's definitely on track, albeit at a slower pace.
Okay. Now, you know, with all this going on, I ask you every show, you still getting 8 hours of sleep?
More like 12.
Wow,
I'm kidding.
You really are an amazing individual. All right, let's take a break, and then we'll hit the phones. Anisa Waheed is here from Tara Kitchen. 800-348-2551 is our number, and we will be right back. Vox Pop, it's Food Friday. Ray Graff with you at 800-348-2551. Anisa Waheed joins us today. And you ready for some calls, Anisa?
Yes, I am.
Let's do this thing. Doug in New Marlboro, you're on.
Oh, hi. Thanks for taking my call. Ray, been a big fan for decades.
Oh, thank
you. Your show. but I had a question about good recipe for harissa sauce. I do a lot of cooking, especially now, and I haven't been able to find a really good recipe for harissa sauce.
Because I own it. No, I'm kidding.
It wouldn't surprise me.
So, you know, harissa is a very tricky sauce or condiment, and there are many, many different recipes for it, and I think you are right. For the most part, the ones that I have found or encountered, I have not liked myself. So I have kind of taken the recipe and I've tweaked it, and I'm happy to share that with you. So basically, we roast some garlic and cumin, actually lots of garlic, lots of cumin in oil, and then I add dried red chili peppers to it and some tomato puree, vinegar, sugar. So it's really simple ingredients, probably stuff you already have at home. But the key to having a good sort of deep flavored harissa and not something that tastes raw and not mature is the slow cooking process of all of those ingredients. And in terms of ratio, you want to have a lot more garlic than you really can imagine. So lots of garlic, lots of whole cumin, and then balancing it with some vinegar, tomato puree, sugar, and chili peppers. That's it, literally.
Fantastic. It sounds simple, and I'm sure it's great.
Okay, well,
it is.
Next time she's on, call us and let us know if you nailed it on the first try, Doug. Thank you. 800-348-2551. It always sounds simple, but is it simple that first try, Anisa?
No, it's not.
No.
I'll give you that. It's because it's a matter of ratio and proportions, right? So how much garlic and all of that kind of stuff. But that's the fun part of recipes, I think. And that's what I love about recipes. I sort of always start with some basic knowledge of the ingredients and then try to add or detract as I'm developing a recipe. And, you know, that's obviously for people who like to cook, I think that's the most fun of it.
Yeah, with all your business ventures, and there are many, do you still enjoy cooking as much as you did back in the old days?
I love it. I beyond love it. And to be honest, one of the silver linings of this whole pandemic has been the lockdown really allowed me to just sit in the kitchen and cook and cook and cook. And in the beginning, you know, when we didn't have a lot of staff around and we were sort of running a lean team and all of those things, it really gave me the opportunity to cook and fine-tune my skills and develop more recipes. We just launched in Gilderland, we launched a new recipe, which has been, not recipe, sorry, a new menu, which I think has been really well received. And it's all thanks to the lockdown, because it gave me the time and energy to sort of focus on food again. And I loved it.
Oh, that's great. And we will talk about that new menu coming up. But Betsy in Schenectady has been waiting a while here. Betsy, go ahead, you're on.
Hi, Anisa and Ray.
Hi.
This is a wonderful follow-up to Doug's question. It's about the potato kati rolls, which I adore and am seriously addicted to. Is the sauce on them a combination of the harissa sauce, and the date prune marinade, or what is on it?
Hi, Betsy. How are you?
I'm good.
The kati sauce is actually a combination of harissa and tomato jam.
Oh, Okay.
So you get a little bit of the heat, but you get sort of the sweetness and the texture and, you know, the jelliness from the tomato jam. So it's good. It's thick, it's sweet, it's savory, and it has a little kick from the harissa.
Yes, and you know it's one of my favorite things, and I do wish it could be on the evening menu. All right.
All right. Well, duly noted. Betsy, thank you.
Yep.
Bye. 800-348-2551. If you have a question for Anissa Waheed, if you want something on the night menu, you know, give us a call, 800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. This tomato jam, I got to be honest with you, Anissa, it's piqued my interest. I have never heard of such a thing. Please explain and also tell me where I can get it.
So, I mean, obviously we make and carry our own version of the tomato jam. But, you know, it's going back to sort of Moroccan cooking and the way they sort of preserve and create and have these very strong flavored ingredients in their pantries that are used in small amounts to flavor food. And tomato jam is a perfect example of that, just like preserved lemons or tsmen, which is a fermented butter. So it's three different kinds of tomatoes that we cook down, slow cook it down for a really long time with some honey and spices and parsley. And, you know, it has sort of a consistency of just like a marmalade, a jam, and it has a lot of strong flavor in it. It's not necessarily sweet. It's more on the savory side. And we use it. I call it my, finishing sauce, because a little bit of tomato jam in many different things can just sort of bring a lot of depth and flavor to a dish, a little bit in beef stew or a little bit, you know, on a bruschetta. So it's got lots of uses, and we use it a lot in the restaurants.
You know, I brought a peanut butter and jelly sandwich for lunch today. You think it would go good on that? No?
I bet it would.
All right, I'm going to try it. Let's go to Nina in East Hoosick. Nina, you're on.
Hi, thanks, Ray, for taking my call. Hi. Anissa, it's great to meet you. I used to live in Paris and would eat Moroccan food, and then I traveled for a month in Morocco, and the culture is fantastic. And I want to ask you two questions. One is, can you make a good vegetarian tagine without special cooking equipment? And if so, how do you do it? And the second thing is, these recipes which you're giving in general for the tomato jam and the harissa, is there a way to either get the products from you or to get more specific recipes? Because I'd like to try them both, in addition to knowing about tagine from you.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, a couple of things. We do have a line of products that you can purchase from either our website or many of the local grocery stores. So you can just go to our tarakitchen.com for that information. And also, I have a lot of recipes on my blog, which is on the website. So you can watch me make a lot of these tagines that we talk about. And I've said this in the past as well. I think, you know, a tagine basically means a stew. And it's also the name of the pot that the stew is cooked in. So you don't necessarily need to have the tagine pot to make these wonderful, amazing dishes. And there's a lot of vegetarian food in Moroccan cuisine that, you know, you can sort of adapt in our culture and our cooking environment here in America. And of course, we do a lot of that. So you can take a look at our menu and get some inspirations and ideas of how we put ingredients together. But you don't necessarily need to have the tagine pot to do that. Check out the videos. Feel free to send me an email if you get hung up on, you know, ideas. But if you look at the menu and the way the menu is written, you'll start to see a pattern. We call out ingredients that you are able to put together at home.
Thank you so much. I look forward to trying
your food.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Nina, thanks a lot for the call. Our number here is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. We're joined on this Food Friday by Anissa Waheed of Tara Kitchen. The new Gilderland location is open, and you say you have a new menu. Do you have different menus in each location?
Well, no. Once a year, we do a menu update, and this is something that I've been doing for a long time. Yep. And so it just so happened, and it's usually around the fallish time, because I spend the summer months sort of thinking and tweaking recipes. So it's in line with when I usually release a new menu, and it just so happened that Gilderland was happening at the same time, so we thought, you know, might as well unleash everything at the same time.
Well, what's new?
Oh, my gosh. So we have a lot of stuff, you know. I think, like I said, during the pandemic, I was cooking all these international style of foods and sort of bringing in the idea of traveling around the globe with food. So we've incorporated some of that into the new menu with, you know, doing some vermicelli stir fries, and we're doing cabbage rolls and tagines, which is really fantastic. It's probably one of my favorite things that I created this summer. We're doing fish cakes on a charred carrot and fresh orange salad. Lots of different things, you know. So I took all the things that we were doing this summer in terms of our recipes and cooking, and I kind of further distilled it in a way that made sense for our brand, but also for things that people are craving, and the idea of like comfort and just good, delicious food that, you know, people like to eat.
Did I imagine this, or did the last time you were in the studio with me, did you bring burgers?
Yes, I have fantastic burgers, actually.
Yeah,
I really do.
So. Yeah. You still have that on the menu?
On the menu that I don't love. Yes, burgers are on the menu. We have a Fez burger. We created this 50-50 burger in that we launched in Troy earlier this year, and that was fantastic with lamb and a beef patty with shrimp and different kinds of cheese, and it's just a fantastic burger. Yes, we do burgers. I have a fish and shrimp sort of hoagie roll. Lots of different things, actually. It's a really exciting menu. So still with the same cooking style that, you know, I think people know me for, and still sort of the same ideas behind how I like to present food, but just in a different vehicle. So we have a fried chicken sandwich like you've never had before with a blueberry mayo.
Blueberry mayo? You know, you're killing me. In the old days, you'd come and you'd bring food. Now
I know. I feel so bad. I should have mailed you some.
It hurts me deep inside. Let's go to the phones. John and Lake Sacandaga Lake, go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Hey.
Try it again. You're in and out of the...
Let me go ahead. You for a couple of weeks.
John, you're sort of... The signal is spotty. Give it another shot.
I'm sorry. I think I've lost you guys.
Yeah. Okay, well, give it another try. I appreciate it. 800-348-2551. I think probably he was in a bad cell spot there. You know, you and I have talked about this over the years, and as you have grown and gotten more locations and the business continues to thrive, and I ask this question like a broken record of those who expand, but how do you maintain your philosophy of making everything fresh and keeping everything ready, brand new when it goes onto the plate, when you have so much volume to deal with? Volume being the tricky part.
Yeah. You know, I think it all comes down to process. You cannot have any of it without the correct process and the correct workflow and the correct thought behind it. And also, you know, it's the process, it's your team. And I think, you know, and then also the customers who are all, it's sort of a circle. Like all of this has to work together in order for what I want to do, you know, for that to actually happen. So I am very, very process driven. I'm very much, I'm workflow driven. So I'm constantly looking at how many steps does this take, or how many minutes does this take. So I think that, again, my printing publishing background coming in. So the first thing, you know, we try to do is really, really fine tune our process and do the workflow and make sure that the recipe works the way it needs to work, because a recipe needs to work two ways. It has to work in the kitchen where your staff and everyone can actually cook it and present it. And then it has to taste fantastic, and you're under time constraints. So there are lots of things that go into creating a recipe for a restaurant that, you know, you're not necessarily thinking about while cooking at home. So all of those things kind of need to work. And so that's where it starts for me. I think about the process. I design the process for the least common denominator, as in, you know, any person walking off the street who's coming to train in the kitchen with me should be able to understand what I'm doing and why I'm doing it. And then, you know, then it's the team and their support and their buy-in to everything that we're trying to do and why we try to do it. So I think it's that balance. And sort of not really taking no for an answer, you know, I think that's what sort of helps us.
And I've asked you this before. Will there be a point where you say, okay, enough is enough? I am now, my market reach is sufficient for my liking.
No.
No?
The world is my oyster.
Okay. This email from Annette. Okay, here's one you might be able to handle before we take our next break. Annette writes, I have enjoyed lentil stew and would like to try and make it. Is there a difference in lentils? And if so, how are the different types paired? And that is from Annette.
Oh, there are so many, 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 many different kinds of lentils. So not only are they different in terms of the flavor, but they're also really different in how they cook. And we use a few different kinds in the restaurant for different reasons. So, you know, it's sort of, I think, too big a question to answer. But one of the most quickest and easiest lentils to cook is a red lentil. And it's I've seen it pretty much in every grocery store, so it's readily available. That's probably the fastest cooking, easiest cooking lentil that you can find and do many different things with. It's a quick boil. You can throw in some onions, garlic, tomatoes, pureed. It's a lentil soup. You can add it to your chicken while you're cooking your chicken with some liquid, and you have like a chicken and lentil dish. So that's one that I recommend a lot to people who are just starting to cook out with grains and lentils and stuff.
And this one came from our friend Carrie, who writes, can you talk about using preserved lemons in tangine cooking? Can I get these locally? Oh, Carrie, that's a question I know Anissa can answer. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, you know, cooking with preserved lemons is sort of what we do all day, every day.
Oh, yeah.
And it's such a amazing, unique ingredient. And you know what's fascinating? I've been using them for 10 years. And even today, I still find new uses for them and, you know, new flavor profiles with them. And the interesting thing about preserved lemons is every batch that you make or every batch that you buy might have a different flavor profile or might be too citrusy, too tart, too sweet. So that's also changes your recipes a lot. And that's sort of the fun of the preserved lemons. Generally speaking, what is recommended to do is to use the rind of the lemon. You chop it up and you throw it into your chicken dish or your lentil dish, and you sort of get this sweet lemony flavor, which is not bright and citrusy. It's not the same thing as squeezing lemon juice out of a bottle or even fresh lemon. But the way I prefer to use them is once we make our preserved lemons, we actually take all the lemons and puree the whole batch. And then we have this little puree that we can add a little bit of it to different dishes, be it soups or be it to seasoned fish or shrimp or in lentil soup. And, you know, you just get a whole new flavor profile by using the preserved lemons instead of just fresh lemon. So maybe, you know, they could try it that way.
You know, and once I discovered those, and thankfully they're available in our local store where I live, it was a revelation that,
yeah.
I mean, my family, they already think I'm a mental case, but I would eat it out of the jar with a spoon.
Yeah.
And I don't think that is probably what Anissa would recommend, but it's really good.
Well, you know, people do this. I mean, in Morocco, people love preserved lemons. And usually you'll see in a tagine, you'll see these huge chunks of lemon that people actually want in there to eat with their food and sort of enjoy that texture and the taste of it. I've not necessarily found that here in my cooking, you know, but that's one of the reasons why I originally started pureeing them, because people didn't like to see the chopped up lemon in the tagines. So I don't think there's anything wrong with just getting it out of the jar.
All right, fine. Well, thank you for the affirmation. Let's take a break. We're joined today by Anisa Waheed of Tara Kitchen. It's always a fun Food Friday when she is here. Back with more of your calls at 800-348-2551 in a moment. It's a Food Friday, Vox Pop. Ray Graff with you at 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. The email address is voxpop@wamc.org. And we are lucky to have Anisa Waheed of Tara Kitchen with us today. Deb is in Albany. Deb, you're on.
Hi. First of all, I want to say I'm so excited to hear that you've opened a place in Albany. We love your food so much, and we've had relatives come from all over, and we always have to bring them there. And so we're excited you're closer to our house.
Thank you so much.
And I have two. Love your food. And I have two questions, if I might. The first one is a follow-up on preserved lemon, which I love to cook with. And we have a big debate in the family about whether to rinse or not to rinse due to the salt. And so I'd like you to comment on that. And my second question is, it seems that the heat level in your wonderful food has gotten more mild over the years. And I am just wondering if you have tweaked it to prevailing taste. And if that is true, how do we order it with a little bit of a ramp up in the heat level? Because some of us do like it pretty hot.
Sure. So with the preserved lemons, I personally prefer not to rinse them. In fact, like I mentioned earlier, the traditional way to even use them is to rinse them and just use the rind and then discard all the pulp and the salt and all the lemon juice that's left over. But like I said, I just take the entire batch, blend it, and then use, you know, you use a smaller quantity of it. It's more concentrated. And then I feel you're saving product. It's hard enough to preserve lemons in North America without having to discard half the product. So that, you know, that's another reason why I like to puree them. And in terms of the spice level on our food, there, you know, of course, the menu changes constantly. And in the way we cook the hot stuff has not changed. But what you might notice a difference in is where we use it and where we don't use it. So as the dishes change and rotate out of the menu, you know, we're very careful to keep the hot and spicy dishes labeled as such, and then the non-spicy dishes labeled as such, so that people can, because a lot of times we find that people are eating Moroccan food or my cooking, especially for the first time. So we want to be careful of what their expectations are in terms of heat level, especially. So on the menu, if you see ingredients listed out that say harissa or spicy date or, you know, a spicy red chili powder, those are the dishes that are going to, you know, gear towards the hot, spicy stuff. And when we say hot, we mean hot. So, you know, that's another thing that I like to let people know. So we've marked those clearly. And but there are certain dishes that were never meant to be hot or spicy, and it's more about flavor and savory. And if you wanted to make them hotter or spicier, you can just, you know, ask for that when you place your order, either in or online, and we're happy to accommodate that.
Great. What do you think of the trend to use rose harissa? Do you like that?
I have not had that. I actually, to be honest, I haven't even heard of it. What is rose harissa?
Well, it's a condiment like harissa, but it's not quite as bold. And Otto Lengi uses it in a lot of recipes. And so my sister ordered some for me from England. So it's a very trendy thing over there.
Interesting. Oh, possibly. Maybe hasn't quite made it over here. No, I haven't seen that. I'll have to check it out.
Yeah, I don't think it's over here, but it's, you know, I guess it's a very popular ingredient. So anyway, thank you so much. Are you in Crossgates or are you near Crossgates? Where are you? Where's your new place?
Yeah, we're on Western Avenue near Crossgates, 1785 Western Avenue.
Okay, great. Thank you so much.
Thank you so
much.
Happy holidays. Yes, thank you.
Deb, thanks for the call. It's Vox Pop. It's Food Friday. Anissa Wahid of Tara Kitchen is our guest. The number is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. One of the things I love to talk to you about is where you have been around the world. And I know in the pandemic, travel has not been easy. But have you been anywhere and have you picked up any tastes, any new spices or new ideas that you may bring out down the line?
You know, okay, so right before the pandemic hit, and I don't know if we talked about this, I was in Sudan.
Oh.
And what was really interesting to me in Sudan was the way they used peanut butter in so many different, I had no idea or concept of what cuisine in Sudan was. So it was just, the whole thing was eye-opening, and we were fortunate enough to have one of the local hosts invite us to their house and cook for us. And it was just so spectacular. So, yes, I came back from that trip and started, you know, doing a lot of stuff with peanut butters and just peanuts in general and, you know, tying it back to my Indian culture. Not so much, you know, there's not a lot of peanuts in Moroccan food, but there's definitely lots of peanuts in Southern Indian cuisine. So that was interesting. But since Sudan, I've not been able to go anywhere except New Jersey. So,
and you know, yeah. That's not quite as exciting as Sudan. Well, you got to give me an example of something that you would cook with peanut butter, because that is about, if it was the end of the world, and it might be,
I could
live on peanut butter about forever. So tell me something that you would use peanut butter with.
Yeah, I did this little recipe for Channel 13. You know, it's like peanut butter and some hot sauce and a little bit of chicken stock. So for the hot sauce, you can use anything that you have at home, whether it's harissa or sriracha or Tabasco, whatever, you know, you have at home. But combine in almost 50-50 percent proportions, you sort of combine the two, and then you have this sweet and really sort of sticky, spicy sauce that we were putting on grilled eggplant.
Oh.
So sliced steaks of eggplant that you grill with a little bit of salt and oil, and then you spoon over this sweet, spicy peanut butter sauce on top of it. And it was really fantastic.
Oh, my
heavens. Really fantastic. So simple. And I was like, I have these ingredients at home, but I never even ever thought about putting that stuff together, you know?
Now, you're talking about a one-to-one sriracha and peanut butter mix?
Yeah. Why don't we say one-to-one peanut butter and Tara Kitchen harissa mix?
Done. You got it. That's you know what? That product placement. I love it. And you know what? I'm going to have to try that. Let's go to Matt in Albany.
Yeah.
Matt, you're on.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
I have a question. I was in Morocco many years. I was with as a college group, and we were at a Moroccan restaurant, and we were served many dishes that we were told were very traditional Moroccan dishes, and one of them was pigeon pie. And I was just wondering if you've ever made it or you're familiar with it.
Hi, Matt. Yes, actually, what you're referring to is often known as a bestia, and I've had it. I love it, and I make a version of it here in the U.S., albeit using chicken. So it's a baked pie with chicken and shredded chicken, scrambled eggs and raisins and nuts and saffron and different sort of spices and parsley, and then you sort of bake it in a pastry.
Yeah, I remember it being in a sweet crust. Is that correct?
Yes, exactly. Yeah, and then it's actually topped off with powdered sugar and cinnamon.
Oh, right, right. Now, in Morocco, when they make it, do they really use pigeon?
Yeah, I believe so, yes.
Okay, because in the group I was with, I really enjoyed it. I thought it was delicious, but a lot of the people, just because it was called pigeon pie, were afraid to try it.
Yeah, and you know, I think that for the most part, like if you're eating in the tourist areas and in restaurants that are geared towards people coming from, you know, foreign countries, even though it's called a pigeon pie, I'm pretty sure they're using chicken. But you know, they like the exotic value of it. You know, is for the tourist. I think they like to use that.
Okay, all right. I don't know if it was pigeon or chicken, but I really enjoyed it. And a lot of people did not want to try it just because of the fact it was called pigeon pie.
Yeah, but I mean, if you
well, thank you very much.
Thanks, Matt. You know, if you think about it, though, I mean, there are so many pigeons around Schenectady, you could really keep the overhead down a lot, right?
Absolutely. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that we don't eat. I mean, you know, I grew up in India, and we sort of in India, you do nose to tail cooking, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And I grew up eating that way, but now I've lived in the U.S. for almost 30 years, and I've lost a lot of that sort of touch because I think, you know, it's not as prevalent or dominant in our cuisine as in some other countries.
It's coming back to some extent. I know we have done nose-to-tail shows here.
I agree.
This email came in from Donna. Now, I'm not sure you can do this one, but we'll try. Donna says, what's the proper way to cook chestnuts? My grandmother took the Italian recipe to the grave. I always botch them, and they're expensive. That's from Donna.
I've actually never cooked chestnuts. The best way to eat them is on the streets in New York City.
Yeah, well, you make a very good point there. All right, Donna. Well, we can't help you there, but thank you for writing us. The number here is 800-348-2551. One of the things that has been sort of a phenomenon during this pandemic and the lockdown, and if you're on social media, which I am no longer, I got rid of my Facebook and the Instagram, I'm sick of the whole thing. But in the early days of the pandemic, everybody was showing what food they made. And it occurs to me that so many people in this country really don't know too much about Moroccan food and Moroccan-themed food. If they wanted to do a Moroccan food night, what are a couple of simple recipes that they could use?
You know, I think, to be honest, like the chicken preserved lemons and green olives is a really simple tagine that you can make that's evocative of Moroccan flavors and with ingredients that you can probably get your hands on fairly easy locally at any of the co-ops or, you know, markets, gourmet markets like the lemons and the Ras Al Hanou. And you really just need some olives, onions, garlic, and chicken. And it's such a simple dish, but yet it's so powerful and tasty in what it conveys. I think that's a really great one for people to try. That's what we always recommend, that when new customers come to the restaurant, that's the one that we want them to try. So that's an easy one. Or you could try doing something with fruits and savory, so using different dried fruits. We use prunes and apricots and raisins and, you know, those kind of fruits. And then you cook it with the protein, with some honey and some spices. And then you get the very classic sweet-savory combination that Moroccan food is so known for.
You know, it doesn't strike me that you're going to get it on the first try.
Well, you know, just like anything, right? It takes practice and watch a lot of videos and read a lot of recipes and find one that speaks to you. And then you just try it. And maybe the first time it's not going to be as perfect as you think. But sometimes if you have never had Moroccan food, then it might also you don't have a benchmark for what it needs to be like. So that could be a little bit, you know, of an hurdle. But if you've had it and you have, but what it comes down to is good flavored food. And, you know, what I like might be different than what you like. So as long as you like it and you're using ingredients from that part of the world, you know, you'll get somewhere close to it.
And you really don't need a tagine to do this, right?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I think one of the biggest differences I find in cooking in a tagine to a regular pot is the texture of the food, I think, is better in a tagine. But if you don't have it, you can still absolutely create the stews in a pot at home with a nice tight lid on it.
You know, this is a possibility for your future marketing. How about the Anissa Waheed line of tagines?
Don't you worry, Ray. All over it.
Oh, really? Are you serious? You're really?
Actually, here's what I'm working on right now is a cookbook.
Really?
And the yes. So the cookbook also it's been an idea that I've had in my head for a long time, but it never really kind of quite came together. Just like sometimes you try a recipe and it just doesn't come together, and then 7 months later, something clicks and you're like, okay, that's what it was missing. And in an odd way, that's what happened during this pandemic. As I was going through this whole process of cooking and creating new ideas and recipes and traveling the world and stuff, one of the things that I really discovered was two important things that people are looking in food is they want comfort.
Right.
And then the second thing is the sweet, savory flavor profile is huge. It's huge.
Yep.
It's what people love. It exists in Italian food. It's in Indian food. It's in French food. It's in Polish food. I mean, so, and of course, one of the things that attracted me to Moroccan food, you know, 15 years ago was the sweet savory profile. So that's where the whole, you know, and it kind of all came together one day where I was like, I'm going to put this book together, which travels through the world and with the, you know, sweet, savory recipes from different parts of the world kind of coming together in a way that worked for us here in America, because you might not always be able to do the sweet, savory the way they do it in Thailand, but we can have our own version of it here. So that's what I'm working on. And obviously, you know, the book is sort of a precursor to, you know, other things, right? So I think...
What do you mean, a TV series?
Show.
Oh, you're going to do a TV show? You know what?
All right, look.
I don't... I'm not calling you a liar, but how do you sleep 12 hours a day and do all this stuff?
Just make the other 12 very, very productive.
Well, I got to tell you, though, that's amazing. It's a great idea, though, if you were to incorporate all these flavors from around the world, you can write off all those trips on your taxes.
Absolutely. It's a win-win. And I'm going to call it, you know, Let Flavor and Comfort Rule. Mm. It's sort of a play on a song that
somebody wrote. Lenny Kravitz, right?
That's it.
And I won't sing it for you at this time, so you're lucky there. Now, we have more calls on the line, but we're just about out of time. The book, do you have a publisher? Will it be out soon, or is this just in progress?
I'm working with some people, and we're still sort of, you know, filling it out and seeing what the best options are, that kind of stuff. So, yeah, it's very much in the works. And, again, another silver lining that came out of this whole pandemic is the book literally sort of revealed itself to me, something that I've been struggling for years to put, you know, pen to paper, and it just literally revealed itself to me, so I'm excited about it.
That is very cool. All right, now you have locations in Troy, in Schenectady, in Gilderland. How do people find out more about Tara Kitchen?
It's really simple. If you go to our website, tarakitchen.com, you'll see all the locations, the food, and all the things that we're up to. We've been doing lots of fun things with, you know, offering meat pies and different options for meals. And so all that information exists there. And, of course, our social media handles on Facebook and Instagram are fairly active as well.
Well, it was so much fun talking to you again, Anissa, and we will talk to you soon, okay?
Thank you so much, Ray. I appreciate you having me on.
All right, now get some sleep. Anissa Waheed, thanks very much. Support comes from Uncle Sam's All-American Chocolate Factory, celebrating the holidays with truffles, almond butter crunch, New England-style fudge, peanut brittle, and ribbon candy, Albany Street, Schenectady at Newton Plaza, Loudonville, UncleSamsCandy.com. And Troy Waterfront Farmers Market, indoors for the winter at the former Price Chopper in Lansingburg, Saturdays 9 to 2, taking orders online for Sunday pickups, TroyMarket.org. Once again, thanks to Anissa Waheed for being here today. Thank you for listening. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer, Jackie Orchard, our producer, Barb King took the calls. I'm Ray Graff. Have a splendid weekend. We'll return on Monday at 2 for a Medical Monday. Best of our knowledge is next.